We'll move now to Appeal 25-1577, Arkao LLC versus Segiza Incorporated. And Mr. Taney, we'll begin with oral argument from you.
Morning, judges of the panel.
Morning.
May it please the court. My name is Frank Taney. I'm here on behalf of Arkao. I want to cover three topics with my principal time. The facts giving rise to Segiza Inc.'s liability for each of the six torts that are alleged here. The second is Arkao's spoliation motion, and the third is Arkao's motion, 59E motion, based on new evidence. And I'm going to refer to Segiza Inc. as Segiza, differentiating them from their subsidiaries that I'll call Segiza UK and Segiza India. Segiza's fingerprints are all over the scope of this project, okay, and they are Chicago footprints. The computer, the Arkao computer, was sent at Segiza's direction to Chicago, not the UK, not India. That is something they answered, they admitted in their answer in this case. Their project manager testified that they wanted to use that software because it had Arkao's code, and they wanted to use that code to help develop the replacement application. Okay, they then proceeded to set up a test lab in Chicago. Again, not in the UK, not in India. So anytime they had to test the entire application, they're going to test that in Segiza's offices in Chicago. They maintained that, they maintained that test lab in Chicago for a year until Arkao served a subpoena on them. At that point, Arkao was litigating against Cummins, who, Arkao contends was a joint tortfeasor with Segiza. They maintained that test lab until Arkao subpoenaed, seeking the software. Then they dismantled that test lab. The code that our expert, Dr. Ricardo Velarde, testified about, he goes into great length in terms of what the dates are on the files that comprise the software. This is a case where Segiza UK contracted with Metro in May of 2016, a full month before there was any contract, okay? The record is clear that the bulk of the software was available as of April 8th, 2016, okay? That the team members from the United States, including Josephine Yang from Segiza, wanted to meet with Cummins, who also had their main offices at the time in Chicago, and say, hey, we have an application here that is ready to test. And this is all before Segiza UK's signed the contract or part of anything.
Is there a specific part of the Arkao software that you contend is entitled to trade secret protection?
Yes, Your Honor. Those are 10 areas of functionality that are articulated in Dr. Velarde's report.
Why are those not just common functionality? What makes them particularly trade secret protected, and what steps then did Arkao take to protect those?
Sure. In this case, the customer, Metro, needed software that would interoperate with a very particular type of coin counting machine. This was made by, there are other coin counting machines out there, other companies, Coinstar, De La Rue, Cummins made a machine called the MM2. Arkao was at the time that Arkao developed the software, starting in 2009 and continuing until they were terminated, were the only company that had developed that kind of software. So if you, and these are machines that require, the Cummins coin counting machine requires inputs from the graphical user interface. So I'm here in the bank, I want to deposit $50 worth of coins, I'm typing things in. The software underlying the GUI, the graphical user interface, is interacting through the middleware and interacting with the coin counting machine itself. Therefore, it has to, the vendor creating that has to acquire that knowledge, which Arkao had, about how to make that work. I believe that your question was, and then Your Honor wanted to know, what were the measures? Well, the measures to protect, we had employees sign, understood that they were under confidentiality obligations. We kept the things secret. We required Metro to keep the software confidential. We required Cummins to keep the software confidential. We had a 45-step configuration sequence that was known only to Arkeo, that was not published, not made available to anyone else that Arkeo wasn't working with. This is how you configure the software. And there's also there's a couple different types of software had to come together in this application to work. Arkeo had base software that was installed on the computer, and then depending at various points in time, as Arkeo went and updated the software as Metro's needs and desires changed, that software had to change, but had to work with the base software. So Arkeo did not make this available to members of the general public. The code was not available to members of the general public, would not have been available to Segezha, for example.
Counsel, and typically in software copyright cases, a plaintiff comes forward and alleges that particular lines of code were copied, right? Because that's what the Copyright Act protects. I don't think there's any allegations, and there have been no statements by Arkeo's experts that there were any particular lines of code that were common between the Segezha software and the Arkeo software. And Segezha makes much of this in their briefs. How do you respond to that?
Yes, there's a line of cases in the Seventh Circuit and elsewhere that state when you have a idiosyncratic, like a footprint or a fingerprint rather, that's in the that's evident either in the software or otherwise, that the normal inquiry can be truncated. And here we have a situation where the version that our expert got to examine, we certainly contend it was not authentic, it was not complete. There, apart from the code, there is contemporaneous artifacts of development. There are emails. There's an issues list. There's things like that show.
Did your expert undertake analysis to determine whether there were identical lines of code between the two types of software?
He did. He did not find those in the version that he got to analyze. What we did also see, and that's what we found base our case on, there's no innocent explanation when you're testing. This was software that was supposed to be independently developed, right? And when you're testing your software on a clean machine, right? We had one make model of a laptop. They wanted to go with a new Lenovo, okay? They're using a Lenovo. Arkeo's name and logo shows up and displays, right? There's no innocent explanation. Arkeo is an arbitrary term, right? Its logo is an arbitrary logo. It's not a proper English noun. There are other examples underlying that. The issues list, right, are quite instructive, right? You have a feature. So this is a coin counting machine that gets put in a lobby of a bank, right? And there's tellers that need to know, hey, there's something going on. You got to get up and go over there and fix this thing, right? So Arkeo, with Arkeo's experience, they programmed in a knock, right? And that shows up as a bug on Segezha's list, right, in the software that they're developing. It wasn't a bug, it was a feature. The reason that Segezha didn't know it was a feature is because they didn't create the original software that they were working with. The full bin limit issue is another issue that Arkeo, in developing its software, so there's a mechanism for sort of letting the machine know, hey, the coins are starting to stack up in the bin here. They're not all the way full, but you're going to have, and these things are heavy, like 800 pounds worth of coins, right? So Arkeo's software, our development team, had a problem in developing that feature. And it was the same feature, the same problem that Segezha encountered. And our expert says there's no innocent explanation for two software development teams working independently, encountering all three of these telltale signs that the origin of the code at some point was Archaeos. And the spoliation motion is particularly relevant because it's clear the dates on the software do not match up the contemporaneous dot. We know that they were continuing to modify the software into 2017. There's no dates past the summer of 2016 in the code that we got to use. Those don't match up. Those raise issues of authenticity. So that is a significant part of the story here on the analysis of the software. The trade secret, one of the things that the Defend Trade Secret Act prohibits is unlawful reverse engineering, okay? So Archaeo had a contract. It specifically forbade Metro from using our software in a reverse engineering effort, right? And so when they violate that contract, contractual obligation, hand the software over to Segezha, that becomes wrongful reverse engineering. So all these efforts, and the other thing that we don't see, because the source code repository is not produced, if you have a feature in software on day one, hey, Archaeo's name and logo is showing up, it's July 1st, what's going on, right? In a source code repository, you would say, okay, the version that was July 19th, that's where we took it out. And here's the code, and it was Joe Reynolds that put it in, it was that date, and here's what he did to effect that change, okay? We don't see that because we don't have the software repository to enable it. What we have is a static one set of code, okay, that does not match up to the timeline.
Let me ask you a question that something you just said is related to. You said, you know, Archaeo and Metro have a contract. The contract prohibits reverse engineering. Archaeo hands over this computer to Metro via Cummings, and then Segezha gets it, does reverse engineering. That's wrongful. That gives rise to a claim here. Am I wrong when I look at that Archaeo Metro contract and I see an English choice of law clause, okay, which explains also why you were proceeding in England, a forum selection, choice of law and forum selection.
Yes.
Does that just not matter here at all because now you're suing Segezha?
Yeah,
but the thing is, with the example you just gave, the obligation not to reverse engineer, that flows to Metro. And you're taking that and saying, you know, Segezha is guilty of that too.
Well, Segezha knew that it was violating this obligation of that it was obtaining this information wrongfully, right? We did not have a contract with Segezha, right? We had a binding legal obligation with Metro. They did not have the right, Segezha, to that software. We did not give it to them. We did not give Metro permission. We did not say to Metro, you can show that to Segezha. So that's why we believe that the reverse engineering that went on here was wrongful.
So to reserve the remainder of your time?
Yes, Your Honor.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Taney. Ms. Patel, we'll turn to you now for argument on behalf of the appellee.
Sorry. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Plak Patel, and I represent the defendant appellee, Segezha, Inc. And we move the court to affirm the district's court judgment, which correctly found Archaeo's claim to be devoid of factual or legal basis. The core facts are undisputed. Archaeo lost its client, Metro Bank, because its software was obsolete, running on Windows XP and Flash technology, and lacked crucial remote management features. Archaeo's entire appeal is a speculative attempt to recover for a purely commercial loss that stemmed from its own failure to innovate. The district court was correct because Archaeo failed on two foundational elements for every single claim that it asserts. One, Arkea produced no admissible evidence establishing the necessary legal relationship or direct involvement to hold the U.S. parent company, Segeza Inc., liable for the acts of its foreign subsidiaries. And two, Arkea failed to meet its burden of proving any protectable IP right or any substantial similarity between the softwares, a requirement this court has correctly concluded, or the district court correctly concluded, reflected a broad deficiency in Arkea's case as it plays fast and loose with evidence.
Let me just draw your attention to one thing that Mr. Taney just mentioned, which is Arkea's insignia popping up on this, and you all know it in your briefs, it's one computer, it's one time, but it does pop up. The logo appears on the computer running the Segeza software in 2016. Isn't there a material factual dispute about that? And if so, why wouldn't that preclude summary judgment? Why shouldn't we take, since we have to construe everything, you know, construe the facts in favor of Arkea right now, at least on the copyright claim?
So, Judge, it's important to consider the whole setup of the coin counting machine in considering this one situation. So the coin counting machine consists of two computers, one being the one that consumers access, and then it has the coin counting hardware, and then there's an onboarding computer, an administrative console within the actual coin counting machine. So that's, and that is separate from Segeza software. The Segeza software was not loaded onto this onboard computer. It was purely on the computer that the consumers interact with. And this is what was specifically said in the document. So, and the, or my apologies. So the word Arkea was only appearing on the onboard computer, the administrative console. And that's unrelated to the Segeza software. And it's important to consider that this whole system, so the actual coin counting machine hardware, the administrative console, did previously have the Arkea software. And so it appearing on this computer was innocently explained by it being a vestigial artifact of the hardware previously having the Arkea software, especially when you consider what was displayed on the screen, which is Arkea's name and phone number. The record shows that Arkea conducted maintenance services on these machines via Cummins. And so it makes sense for the administrative console to show Arkea's name and number if it's showing that there's an issue with the machine that they would need to then service. Segeza never provided maintenance services for the computer. It was not involved with anything in terms of deciding the hardware or maintaining the hardware. Its role was solely limited to the Segeza software, which Arkea admits was only located on the Lenovo computer. And so really this is a red herring. And again, this goes back to the fact that, you know, even if Arkea's argument is taken as true that this is a proverbial smoking gun, this would be something that would be seen in the software. And Arkea to date has not pointed out anywhere in the Segeza software where the word Arkea appears or that there's any similarity between at all. You know, and counsel made the contention that there's case law saying that when there's instances of fingerprints that we can do away with the analysis of substantial similarity. However, I'm not aware of any such case law, and I'm not aware of any case law that was cited as such in Arkea's brief as well.
Let me turn you to another thing I'm looking at. How can we affirm the district court's denial of sanctions when the district court did not explain it? Don't we have case law that says district courts need to explain their sanctions decisions, and we have to send it back when they don't do it in a way that allows for appellate review, meaningful appellate review? Here in the district court's second opinion, we have one footnote that says, oh, and I did look at that. I did consider plaintiff's argument that defendant had spoliated evidence that plaintiff deemed relevant to its claims and concluded that it lacked merit, period.
And so the judge did put that in a footnote, but in the opinion, the judge stated that Judge Bucklow declined to do a fact-by-fact analysis because of the wholesale deficiency of Arkea's, you know, factual statements and its briefing, and then further, it made its ruling on RKO's own admissions, which contradict its argument regarding spoliation. And so, you know, if we look at the record, RKO admits the fact that Segeza India produced the entire contents of its repository. It was a blatant admission that we produced multiple versions of the code, manuals, descriptions, the whole work product in the entire repository was produced, and RKO admits that in its summary judgment briefing. Yet, in its subsequent briefing and before this court, now it says it wasn't produced.
But doesn't all that go to her decision on the merits about the spoliation issue? How does that substitute for an explanation of her sanctions decision?
You know, her Judge Bucklow's explanation was simply that she didn't find merit. And, you know, I do think that it goes towards the fact that the record shows that there was no merit, that RKO itself is contradicting itself and is attempting to make arguments unsupported by the record in order to manufacture a dispute that does not exist. One of the cases cited by RKO states that, you know, for an abuse of discretion, you know, a decision is left unexpected or not, when it's not apparent from the record. And so here, you know, I believe that the district court did not commit an abuse of discretion because it's shown clearly on the record that the arguments were meritless by RKO's own admission and also through subsequent evidence in the record, including multiple affidavits by Segeza stating that it produced multiple lines of this or multiple versions of this code, an independent production by Metro Bank of the code at issue, and verification by Segeza's expert who did actually look at the code that stated that this is a full and complete copy of the code. And of course, RKO's own admissions that it received a full copy of the source code and full copy of the repository. But it also goes back to the issue of the relevant parties. Segeza Inc. never worked on the actual back end of the source code. The source code was not maintained by Segeza Inc. It was solely maintained by Segeza India in servers based at its location in Bangalore. And so these copies of the source code were produced by Segeza India. What RKO has failed to establish is what obligation Segeza Inc. had to produce the software or how they would even possess the software, considering that it was not located on their servers. This was not a project that they were directly contracted to complete. This was a project that Segeza UK was contracted to make, and they subcontracted services to Segeza UK and Segeza US, or Segeza India and Segeza US. And Segeza India was contracted to do the actual software, the back end of the software. And so it makes sense that the source code was entirely housed by Segeza India. Segeza Inc. was merely subcontracted by Segeza UK to work on the user experience, the graphical user interface, which is just the general appearance of the software. So the animations, what a user would see when they go to the console and like the pages that they would flip through in order to get through the function of coin counting machine. And there's been no evidence to the contrary, despite, you know, RKO's attempts to rewrite the record. You know, in their brief, they state now that Segeza US employee Akhil Gopal Krishnan created the back end of the software. Yet, in the motion for summary judgment, they admitted that Akhil Gopal Krishnan, as evidenced by his extensive testimony, only worked on the user experience, which he stated again and again, and that Sri Kapalan Gupta and Vikas Valsang from Segeza India were the employees that worked on the back end of the software. So, and you know, next I do want to turn to RKO's general discussion of the copyright claims. And so, as I mentioned before, you know, we're not aware of any case law that indicates that RKO can do away without showing any substantial similarity between the software. This case has been pending for years, and this is almost a third bite at the apple. And to date, RKO still cannot show any similarity between the codes. And it admitted such in its argument. And this shows light as to why Arkeo is making these spoliation claims that have no basis in record, in the record or in evidence, because this is the only way that they can survive a motion for summary judgment. And, you know, as the district court concluded, there was no analysis of the code. There was no evidence that there was any similarity. There's no case law indicating that Arkeo can do away with showing similarity. And even more so than that, Arkeo has failed to establish any access to the Arkeo software. It refers to an Arkeo computer. You know, of course, tellingly, it does not give a make, model, serial number, any details associated with this computer. It states that this computer belonged to them, yet the record shows that this computer was taken from a Metro Bank location in Chelsea. And this is established by documents produced by Cummins, who was in charge of these locations at Metro Bank. And there's nothing in the record besides Arkeo's own statement that shows that this computer was owned by anyone besides Metro Bank. But moreover, Arkeo doesn't show that there's anything special about this computer that would not be to anyone else. Yes, the computer may have at one point had the Arkeo software in executable format, but that's no different than someone having Instagram downloaded on their phone. That's not appropriation. It contained no source code by its own admission, and the record is devoid of any evidence of reverse engineering. There's no discussion. There's no communications working further on this tablet. In fact, the record shows that within days of receiving it, Metro Bank had made the decision to switch to an entirely different computer system, and the tablet was disregarded because the team was focused solely on a Lenovo computer on an upgraded system. By Arkeo's own admissions, its software could not even work on this Lenovo computer. Arkeo testified that it had tried using its software on a system besides Windows XP. It tried using its software on Windows 8.1. It tried using its software on Windows 10, and it did not work. And so once Segeza and Metro Bank pivoted to this Lenovo, which was Windows 8.1, it's uncertain how Arkeo's code could have even been usable. Especially on upgraded system, based on its own admission that its code would not have worked on the system. So it's perplexing how outdated technology could have informed something that was new and upgraded. It's not a direct translation, and by Arkeo's own admission, it would not have worked. Even more concerningly, it used Arkeo software used Flash software, which was outdated. By 2017, Adobe had already announced that it would no longer be supporting Flash. And so Segeza software has no reference to Flash because it does not use Flash. And so it's not a direct translation, and Arkeo fails to kind of explain how these outdated technologies and this outdated code could have even been relevant to the Segeza software. So not only is there no evidence of actual access, when we look at the codes themselves, there's no substantial similarity, nor could they be substantial similarity because of the lack of congruity between the type of technology that's used. And in light of that, Segeza or Arkeo has now harped on the spoliation claim despite its own admissions that the software was produced. And it made the argument that certain files were dated. However, it does not refer to what version of the Segeza software it's looking at. There was various versions worked on from March through the winter of 2017. It does not tell you what version, the date stamp of the document, and it doesn't even tell you why these file dates are important. Just because there's an older file date doesn't mean that there's a newer one. And so this like wholesale lack of ability to give citations to the record is really what's commonplace in the arguments. And it's because of those two points that, you know, I urge this court to affirm the district court's ruling that generally, one, that Arkeo has produced no evidence that directly implicates Segeza Inc., and two, that Arkeo has played fast and loose with its evidence and failed to meet its any burden on any respect by simply making assertions that are not supported by the record or evidence before the district court and before this court. So I think this court court's time.
Thank you, Ms. Patel. We'll now move to rebuttal argument. Mr. Taney, from you.
Thank you. 2 points I want to address. If you look at what the actual emails discussing the appearance of Arkio's name and logo, they don't mention administrative console. They also ask someone in the email chain who's from Cummins, could it be coming from the Cummins machine? No, he says. There is no Arkio source code on the Cummins machine, and there is not.
So it wasn't from the administrative console that the Arkio name came up?
Right. It was from the onboard computer. You will look at the emails, and administrative console does not appear. You will also see from Cummins, it's like, that's not coming from Cummins. Okay. Also, we submitted, their expert did not talk to anybody who actually did any of the coding. Okay. We submitted an affidavit from Mr. Tustin, who's in the audience, from our expert. They actually analyzed the operation of the software. They explained how the Arkio appeared. They examined it. Also say we do not know what was on the Arkio computer because that disappeared. Okay, and your honors can look at the record. This code we had to examine was delivered after the close of fact discovery. We had to extend the discovery schedule because they finally produced it after I confronted them. So the spoliation evidence is very real.
Thank you, Mr. Taney. Thank you, Ms. Patel. The case will be taken under advisement.